All right, guys, that awkward moment where we start. In the name of Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Our Father, God's in heaven, Lord be thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, forgive us our trespasses, and forgive those trespass against us. Lead us not temptation, but those from evil one in Christ Jesus our Lord, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen. Okay, for those of you who are online or on YouTube, the Zoom link is in it if you want to participate in the discussions. Tonight's background image is courtesy of Noah Shamsun, who chose for us that we're using the moon. So for anyone wondering why that's the case, that's why.
Abuna, we can't hear you.
You can't hear because I'm on mute. thank you for telling me. So as a repeat, for those who are online, if you're on YouTube, there's a Zoom link in case you want to participate. The moon background is courtesy of Noah Shamsun, who chose it and said we can do church in the morning. And then somebody is going to be walking around with a mic. So there's been feedback about the last few weeks. Some love it, some people hate this style, which is fine. The questioning style, this is probably the last one. I was originally going to do faith today. And then I looked at it and I'm like, no, the nature of faith, the substance of faith, the pursuit of faith, I want to do after we've done the narrative. And so I think its placement mattered when I was reviewing it. I'm like, I think it's a step too early right now to talk about that. But this will be the last kind of in your face asking a million questions. So if you hate that style, don't worry, it will be done. There'll still be thinking questions, discussion questions, but it won't be the bulk of the talk. Going forward. But just to kind of recap where we've been going with this, it's all hopefully logical. Of like, number one was, can we agree that there's an absolute truth? Because if you can't agree that there is, then there's no point in any of this. And then after that was to talk about the link between freedom and truth in the sense of, can I do whatever I want, objectively? Can I? And we talked about all that jazz. I'm not going to redo last week's talk. Today, I'm going to zoom in, and it was actually brought up a little bit last week on the link between what I do and what I think. And I'm hyper stressing these things. And I know it might sound really out there and philosophical, but it's not. Because if you start to understand these topics, you understand why Twitter's psychotic. And Instagram and whatever people are talking on in terms of the truth police from whatever side you're on, I don't really care. But in terms of the narrative, in terms of what we're trying to convince people of, in terms of virtue signaling, is that all of these things fit into a framework of thought, right? And so if you don't know your framework of thought, or even if what you're thinking even makes sense, then you're just random. And when you're random, you actually tend to be less fulfilled. And it's not a shock to me that when people have become devoid of meaning, they become devoid of joy as well. But so some of you might have heard some of this talk before, but I'm okay with that because the point of this was to go in a particular order to set the basis. Because from this, I think we should be able to actually have the conversation about what we actually believe, what that narrative is, and not just in terms of a list of beliefs, but in terms of the whole framework. So we can make sense of what's the point of spiritual life? Why should I bother praying? How do I decide? Like, it affects everything, whether I go to med school or not go to med school, since everybody needs to go to med school, apparently. What is work for? Why is it not okay to punch my neighbor in the face objectively? But I mean, those are trivial, but there's no answer to anything in life if there's not reason. So it comes back to that. So first question, and I guess I'm going to push you to originally answer. I hate saying this, because it's whatever. Answered a little bit secularly, in the sense of I'm not asking, trying to get you to say a Sunday school thing or saying because the Lord is good and that kind of thing. He is, but that's not what I'm trying to get out of you. But I'm just trying to get at the core way of thinking, and feel free to even just be thinking the way that others might think. But the first question is, I know that one or two people online might laugh at this question because it spurred for us like a 4 or 5 hour discussion 20 something years ago. Vaguely and on purpose, vaguely, the first question is, why do you do what you do? How do you choose, and it's vague on purpose, what makes you do whatever you're doing, whether it's school, driving, a career, non-career? Why do you do what you do? You're gonna be moving a lot.
Morality.
Morality? Okay, so you're saying all of your decisions are motivated by whether something is morally right.
They should be, yes.
Okay, so if you were to choose between Doritos and Gatorade, would that be based on morality for you? I'm playing devil's advocate, and I like that you said morality, but
It can be, yes.
okay, in what way?
If I'm dehydrated, I should have Gatorade.
How do you know you're dehydrated? And why would you say it's morally right to drink Gatorade?
I guess going back to last week, where it's like, what is true? It abides by that.
Okay, I hate that you went through that fast. But we'll come back to that. Okay, for what other reason? I'm gonna come back to this because it's gonna be part of, for sure gonna be part of today's conversation, for goodness, but I feel like you're Vanna White. She's looking at the host. why do you do it? Let me ask a question because I'll have to provoke it. How do you buy a car? You looked at guys right away. There was a sexism there. And you're a girl. Somebody walk me through how you would go about buying a car. Girl. Go ahead, Christine.
Doing some research to start the type of car that you like, and then maybe like what is the best car of that brand of car, whatever it's called.
She's checking with her husband, but they're online now.
And this, oh, I guess you could start if you're going to get a new car or a used car. Then you have to take different avenues on each of those options.
So, how did you choose new or used, and how did you know it was the best in this class?
They have the book that explains it. What is it called? The
Okay. I'm sorry. And the Kali Blue books will tell you whether it was good or not. Okay. I'm going to pick on that, but I just want to read the ones online before I pick on you more. Some of the answers were because you want to. Some are genes and social conditioning. I have to, or I like to, out of necessity, reward system. One was saying you need to buy a car with money. True. So, why should I get a car? Should I think about when I'm buying a car? I'm forcing the conversation in a weird direction. Because you talked about practicality, you talked about how good it is, whatever good means about cars, and what a book told you. Should I think about whether or not it impacts the environment? And I use the word should. I didn't use the word can I. Should I? Why? So people are nodding. Why? Why should I? Sorry? To save the planet? Why should we save the planet? As my brother said, that's my kids' issue.
Then it'll die.
So what?
Then the human race will die.
So what? We're gonna die anyway.
Yeah. But
why not die with a nice car?
Yeah. Should you?
Yeah.
You should.
Yeah, you just should. Okay. Anyone else have any thoughts on whether you should? Online, because we are stewards of the earth and need to take care of it. Who says? And how do I know that's the way to steward? What if I were to say, well, I think a better stewarding would be to let it burn because people became dumber and they're going to ruin it even more. And I want to expedite the second coming of the Lord. I'm just throwing out random stuff. Then you are wrong. Correct. You are objectively right. But how do you know that I'm wrong?
You're not God. You don't get to choose when that happens.
Who gets to choose what God thinks? God does. So how do I know what God is thinking, even though I didn't want to take it in the religion direction? That'll be one of the topics, but it's not today's topic. But sorry, because I asked. Okay. But is there an answer? Let's say I look to the heavens and I said, oh Lord, ought I to buy this vehicle? And the heavens did not respond. Is there a right way to think about buying this car? Okay, how do you choose a career? Based on what? Sorry?
Talent,
Talent,
skills,
okay.
passion, drive, motivation to that career.
Okay. So why are those the characteristics being focused on and anyone? Like, why should I care that I'm gifted if this just pays more, for example?
Might be a need for it.
There might be a need for it. So whose need and why does that need matter?
Because we have an obligation to each other for the survivability of the species.
Do we have an obligation?
Yes.
Who said?
No one said, but based off of, observation of like all of history, we can see if we want to live better lives, then we have an obligation for each other.
So I'm not saying it doesn't matter because no one cares as long as you're happy. I'm going to come back to that because that you're happy is part of today's talk actually. But I could say historically, so I mean historically you can find evidence of any side you want, right? So could I say to the Inuit, you have an obligation towards me, so could you please leave the Arctic and come teach me how to hunt? Because I feel like it, and you owe me because you're another human.
I mean, is there other people available? Like, what is the greater obligation?
Who decides greater obligations? This is great.
Based off of the, I guess based off the need, looking and examining the population as much to the best of your ability.
If you're curious me to just keep going at you. So who decided that? Who decided what the needs are? What if somebody said, actually, what they really need is not that, what they need is a good hug? And you're like, no, what they need is actually insert whatever you thought they needed. So how do we decide that that is what they needed?
I guess examining them and seeing there's some things that are like, I need to go back to this word, that they truly need. For example, if they have an infection, they need antibiotics. Like that's just true. So examining those things first, well, I think some things are more subjective. We can kind of ignore those.
So what do they say? So who decided that the antibiotics actually is objectively more needful than the hug? What if the person says, I would rather die, but die in a warm embrace? How do you get to say, no, what you need is amoxicillin 500 TID?
Sorry, that was a good joke.
Thank you.
I'm aware. Okay, anyways. I guess sometimes like people may not know exactly what they need and what's beneficial for them, you know. But examining, you know, going back to what we said, life is better that it was good, that it's true, rather than death.
Okay.
So,
but what makes that true? Talk number one. Okay, no problem. Thank you for doing this. Online, we try to make every choice in our lives steers towards survival. We are built to pursue life instinctually. How do you know that's true? Tommy, and okay, you wrote it publicly, so I can say it. Marco, if you want to reply to that on the chat, please go for it. And after Tommy, if you want to turn on your mic and answer, go for it. Just one sec. Tommy.
I was just going to say, even Paul says, I would rather go and be with my Lord, but I still need to be here to serve you and be with you. So it's good to be here and serve those in need.
So what makes Paul right? Blasphemy. Marco, did you want to say something, or if you are, you can unmute if you want.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, I guess, like, in purely physical manner, like, we, if there's ever danger or anything, we like back away from it, or we try to get away from danger. And in the same way, if there's something that assists in our survival, like a food source, or you know, other such things, we tend to stay by it and move closer to it. So like instinctually, like we pursue some stuff that helps us live.
So what happens if my instincts are wrong? How do I even know to trust my instincts? Because sometimes our instincts, we already are suspicious of. And we also have in nature, animals and plants that self-destruct. So why should I trust one instinct over a competing instinct?
I'll have someone else answer this one.
Anybody want to answer that? How'd you, go for it.
Can I go back to that?
Yeah, go for it.
Why is life good and true, I guess? Because anything that comes to an end, like ultimately, useless.
You would have a good friend in Augustine. That's cool, but I'd be like, but how did you decide that it's useless? So who says ends are bad? I mean, Augustine does, but that's just Augustine. I am joking for whoever's listening to this recording later.
Because it ultimately ends, like there's no purpose by the end.
So a nihilist is quite comfortable with that. So who cares? Evolution, we died, it was good for the planet that you died.
The planet will die eventually. And then we'll get disaster.
Okay. I'm gonna switch it to another question. How do you buy a how do you choose a spouse? Not buy a spouse. We're gonna come back to all of this. How do you choose not purchase a spouse?
Say that again.
How do you choose a spouse?
Yeah. That's a tough one.
I'm escalating them. I started with trivial and we're gonna go up.
You don't. God chooses.
God chooses. Okay.
Well, you gotta give God some options, you know.
I say that whoever mama says, you write your pros and cons. Oh, I'm assuming Ramos.
So answer from outside of God's perspective is mm-hmm. what we're trying to go for and guessing. I guess it's someone that you both agree that you wanna like your goals both align together and you wanna join each other and work on your goals together in life.
Okay. Who cares? What if it's opposites attract? Why is that not right?
I mean, it can be right for some people. It's just like usually based on observation, it's not really good to have both opposites go. Like opposite end will lead to more problems because this person wants to do this with their life, and then this person wants to do this with their life. And at the end of the marriage, it's like you're joining each other's journey into one journey together. So you're giving up the separate journeys to go on one journey together.
So what if in my observations I've seen opposites do quite fine together, and I think it's good for there to be variety, which is the spice of life.
I mean, there can be variety in some areas, I guess, but not where on the core beliefs
How
of.
do you know that, and how do you know if that's any good?
I don't know, actually.
Online, eeny, meeny, miny, moe from one prison. How would you know it's a good match? If you use the word good, how do you know it would be good to marry this person? You don't. Okay, so what would you be considering that would affect whether it is good?
The values.
Okay, so someone's saying the values. Okay. How do I know what values are good?
You ask them.
Christ's relationship with the church.
Okay. What if I don't like that? So someone's saying, I think the reason we do things is because we want to, and what we want is going to align with what is important to us. Excellent. But what makes it good? Okay.
So are we like basing this on that we know that there is an absolute truth, or are we taking that away?
Honestly, I think even people who realize there's an absolute truth function like there isn't one. So from either. But I prefer if even if there's going to be an assumption, I was operating in the beginning without the assumption of truth in religion, which you'll see why. Like that's like I'm trying to over hyperly focus a point. But let me ask a different, very political question. And I am not asking you to debate this issue, like before I get massacred online and in person. How do we determine if it is good to sanction abortion as a law? I'm not asking you to debate abortion or the church's view on abortion or any of that. That's not where I'm going with it at all. I'm using it because I'm trying to show the relevance of this question in real life, because it shows up in real life and we're all pretending to understand and agree on stuff that we don't actually agree on. So, what would be things to consider in deciding if it was good? And here, from a completely secular perspective, just because I don't want us to turn into an abortion debate, and derail where I want to go with this. Just secularly, you end up.
You as a human, what makes your life more worthy or, than the babies?
Okay, so the concept, I'm going to summarize as concepts rather than make it a debate. So this concept being considered, for anyone who's going to raise their hand to this, I just want to be like bring up concepts rather than debate. The concept here that you're promoting is saying I would be considering value of life, right? Of is there a competition of value of life? Okay, what other things would you be considering? Online autonomy and quality of child's life once born, before I forget that. And there's another one that I'm going to read in a moment, but go for it, whoever has got the mic.
Wait, do they buy like if they meant it to happen or not?
I think the person is referring to the person who's seeking its autonomy over themselves.
Yeah, I was just gonna say if it was out of their hands, not their control.
Okay, so whether it is in their control. Okay, so I won't spend too long on there because I'm scared of where it might go. My point in saying this as a question is you're bringing up principles. Who decided that those are good? How do you decide whether autonomy matters more than quality of life? How do you decide whether There is such thing as a hierarchy of the value of somebody's life. Where are those concepts coming from that we're using and calling good? Right? Because everyone who's voting, regardless of what side, is saying we're voting for what we think is good, quote unquote, for society, from whatever side anybody's on. So I'm saying is that we're using this language to decide goodness, but how did we get to that?
I mean, it kind of goes back to the point of absolute truth. Without absolute truth, nothing really matters. You can do whatever you want. I can do whatever I want. And I can consider what I'm doing good, and you can consider what I'm doing evil. And I wouldn't care because it's my truth or this is your truth.
Right.
So we need something absolute to be like the actual divide between good and bad.
Excellent. And we're gonna obviously arrive at that. I'm just gonna read one of the things from online so I don't ignore. I think ultimately everyday decisions, whether big, such as career choices, marriage, or small, such as should I have Doritos or Lay's, are ultimately a personal choice because the best thing about God is that He gave us free will. Now, those choices can be instinctual, like Marco said, or they can be subjective interpretation of some objective truth, such as God gave me certain talents, my interpretation of objective truth. And I think these talents are suitable for this career, personal choice. Okay, the distinctions are good, but it still doesn't answer on what makes something inherently good or not. So let me do this scenario that you've probably done in school, but we'll do it together. The runaway trolley. How many of you guys have done the runaway trolley? Okay, so we shall do the runaway trolley. Okay, so the scenario for those who don't know the runaway trolley is this. Suppose you are the driver of a trolley car. I'm doing this because I just want to get the thoughts out of what we're doing. Hurtling down the track at 60 miles an hour. Up ahead, you see five workers standing on the track, tools in hand. You try to stop, but you can't. You're the driver. The brakes don't work. You're desperate because you know that if you crash into the five workers, they will die. Okay. Now you notice a side track off to the right that if you pull a certain levee, you'll go on that track on which there is one worker. And so you now have a choice. You realize that if I pull the lever, I could kill one person. And if I stay on track, I would kill five. What do you do, George?
I think, you know, I've
Sorry.
I've heard the variant where like it's your family member, and I think that makes it a little more difficult. Like it's one person who's your mom or your dad or something that you're gonna kill if you move, then I think that makes it more difficult. But I think in this scenario, if the five people are gonna die anyway, and you know that for a fact, that these five people are gonna die if you continue on the track, then it only makes sense to move to
Why does it only make sense to kill five instead one instead of five?
whatever. Because one person dies, objectively, is less than five people dying.
But why does this one individual's life is worth less than the five?
Well, because if you don't know anything about them, one is less than five. That's the only information you have.
Lucas. Sorry, Sandra.
I think with this problem, there's a question of if you have a direct influence on the results. So are you culpable if you pull the lever, or are you culpable if you let it just run naturally and you don't have any attack, or you don't have any role in it? All right, so if I pull the lever, I have a role. So I have now caused a murder. I've essentially killed because my action has led to that. Versus if I let it go, then am I culpable for what is going to happen?
Okay. So your focus is culpability and your focus is quantity of deaths. Which one's a better consideration? And someone's saying online, non-action is a choice, therefore it is an action.
I agree with that too.
And to your point of culpability, one person can jump out and then you're not involved. Someone's saying Jesus takes the wheel, or put it in reverse. Okay, so no, so culpability versus quantity, which one?
It depends on what you value more. Do you value life and like quantity of life, or do you value like your like murderous? Like did you murder and kill somebody?
So, George, what was your response to that?
Like I agree I agree that, like, yeah, taking no action is an action, because, like, you're making it, like, again, assuming you know for a fact that these five people are going to die, if you're choosing not to pull the lever, then you are still killing those five people. And I mean, I'd rather have one person with a conscience than five, and preferably not.
Okay, then let me change this scenario and see how you feel. You are standing on a bridge, observing it happen, and you notice someone as obese as me, that if you pushed over the bridge, would land in front of the trolley. I would surely die, but it will not kill the five or the one. Or forget that there's an option of the one. I am now the one. Of like, it can only go straight and kill the five. But if you push me over, I will die, but they will not.
But then still one person dies.
Sure. But is it any different now that you pushed me over the bridge? It's still one versus five.
You're an observer, not the person that's taking the first action itself.
But you can see that your involvement, your engagement could save five people from dying. And I would, it's just one died.
But you physically kill that other person.
Yeah. Say it again.
But you physically kill that other person.
Right. But in scenario one, he's still physically killing the other guy.
Yeah, but not from his own will. He can't do anything about it. But me as an observer pushing you off a bridge to save the others, that's me willing to kill you to save the others.
So in choosing to pull the lever in scenario one, is his will not involved? Or is it the level of will, and how do you decide that that's good? Sorry?
It's a trolley.
It's going so fast. You're like, there's no way. There, someone's going to die. Be a superhero. Ramos.
I think, like, when you change yourself from being an only observer to the one taking the action, then you're implicating yourself in it, and you therefore decided you are the one who's like to decide what's good and bad. Then you cannot, why are you the one deciding when the other person is that's driving the trolley should be the one that's deciding whether to go off the track or.
So what if you're looking at being like that poor guy is like in scenario B, is being forced to kill five, but I'm helping prevent five from dying.
If it's you sacrificing yourself, I can go behind that, because I'm making the decision about my own life and not harming someone else in the process.
Okay, so in your scenario, personal autonomy matters the most. Others, it's the level of culpability. Others, quantitative. So I want to know in your case, because you're okay with one versus five, what do you think of pushing me over the bridge? And I will try not to take it personally.
So, like, is the lever still involved? Like, can the trolley driver still go on the other track, or is there only one track
now? There's not only one.
I mean, if there's only one track, then the driver is gonna. Yeah, there's no decision to be made, but.
So push.
But if I push you over, then are you guaranteed to stop?
Yeah, I'm guaranteed to die, and I'm guaranteed to stop the trolley.
But what if I miss?
You will not. In this scenario, you will not. And John brought up morality at the beginning. I'm like, what's the moral choice here? Mark.
I don't really have an answer to what the moral choice is, but I do think that both of these scenarios are the exact same. And the reason is because, like, in both situations, like, you're the only person with a decision, with an action, right? And it's the same exact things at stake, right? Different methods of doing it, right? Like pushing the wheel versus like pushing, right? One which seems more aggressive, but it's, at the end of the day, I feel it's sort of the end result that is, you know, more in mind than like, you know, like it's the end goal versus like the process. So that's really like, that really matters.
And so neither of those are good. So we keep like the proposition of the question is, you know, out of, you know, which is better to do, which is good.
Yeah.
And it's a less of evil type situation. Neither of them would be defined as good. If Michael does that, I'm going to go afterwards and say, high five, Michael, good choice. Because it's...
But do you think the five might that survived?
Selfishly, but not as an absolute goodness.
Okay.
Out of the situation. They're happy they're alive.
Okay.
The situation's not good.
Romans.
Just playing devil's advocate. Why do you think the situation is not good? Why is it good? Why is it not
good? Because something negative is coming out of it.
But what? How is it negative? What if,
because
how
is death?
Well, what makes death so bad? Yeah. But all right. So online, I guess it depends if you believe in utilitarianism, which we're going to get to, or Kantianism, which we'll get to. This person favors Kantianism. Another person is saying it's frustrating because there's no right answer. It's the moral implications. And then it just goes back to what we think is good or value. And that's exactly my point, is I'm trying to get at, we use the word good, but what do people really mean when they say that? So let me look at a bigger question. If this was not hypothetical, but real, right? Like if this is not a hypothetical, what would that mean? For example, after I wrote these random factoids from a professor who had presented, I'm like, dang, that's crazy. After Hurricane Charlie in 2004, there's an area that was hit really badly by the hurricane. And they had almost no access to, like, basically anything. Their electricity was down. $2 bags of ice were being sold for $10 because there was no power for fridges or air conditioners. Okay? Same community. Contractors offered to clear two trees off a homeowner's roof for $23,000, right? Something that would never cost that. Household generators that were usually $250 were sold for $2,000. $40 motel rooms in 2004 were going for $160. So these are now not hypotheticals. This actually happened as an actual real hurricane. How many of you think there's nothing wrong with that, and you're allowed to think there's nothing wrong with that?
I think so many things into play. Yeah.
Okay.
One, why is that happening? Because of like the market, the capitalist market.
And then you debate whether a capitalist market is good.
Okay.
Or right, whatever the word you want to use. And also the means of the people that need the service. So if they have the means, then obviously it's easier. But they don't have the means, and it's necessary for them.
So how do we decide which one's good?
I guess that's a larger question, is what can you say is universally true?
If you can. But I wouldn't even go that far yet. I do agree it would somewhere. But I'm just saying, I'm trying to highlight, this is like the abortion thing or other things of saying, like, I'm glad you hesitantly put your hand up, but of saying, are we respecting autonomy, right? Of saying, this is, I'm allowed to do it. Why are you telling me to inhibit my freedom based on what? I'm allowed to sell at whatever price I want in this kind of market, right? And another person is saying, well, you should be altruistic and think about this and this and this, because you think that that's good. What if I don't care? What if I actually think natural disasters are great for naturally reducing population? Survival of the fittest, the more intelligent people will live, or those who know how to get what they want, and that's good for society. How do I pit them and choose which one of them is right?
Well, I guess what you prioritize is more true, I guess. What is more important, more altruism and continuation of the species or autonomy? And you can arrive to each conclusion by kind of putting in each scenario and seeing which one is more right in each scenario, I guess.
Okay. I can ask one more question and then I'll get lecture-ish for the ending. What makes there's one reply that I didn't see. Supply and demand, there's no good or wrong here, but what makes pleasure or pain good or bad? the last one before I get into it. Go on now. Sorry?
What gives you direct benefit to yourself?
Okay.
That your motivation for it. So that's why you feel like you're drawn to it, which makes it good.
Okay. So you're linking the personal benefit of it.
I disagree with that because, like, okay, when you're looking at, let's say, I'm going to go, I have two choices, whether to go work out or go watch TV all day long. One, both of them will give me dopamine. One is going to give me instant gratification, give me more dopamine right away. But long time, and I would think that's good right now and it's benefiting me and I'm relaxing and I'm enjoying myself. But the long term, if I keep choosing that over and over and over, I'm only hurting myself. But yeah, if I go to the gym, yes, my body will be aching for a bit. But in the long term, my health will actually benefit. So how are you deciding what the benefit, like the, what is your, the benefit, the definition of benefit?
Any strong comments? John.
I think neither good or bad. It's more so the propensity each one has towards pushing oneself to, like, for example, pain. I might, you know, have a cough, and that shows me, hey, I have an illness and I need to take care of it, or I'll or die, or I'm the quality of my life is a little bit less. The same thing goes for pleasure. Like, we have dopamine in order to encourage us to, it's a reward in order to do tasks that we like, and, you know, some tasks are more important than others, but they're both just tools in order to push us towards the right thing. If they push us towards the wrong thing, then, which is death, it would become wrong.
Okay. I'll fast forward. So usually this talk would have been done independently of the previous two, and we would not have talked about absolute truth, and which is obviously clearly where I'm trying to go with some of this. But the reason why I still care about doing this is, okay, from the way you guys were answering, like, some of you, like, we kept on eventually edging at absolute existence. But is the, this is the way that society tends to function, is the debates that were kind of happening here, right? So you might have the duty-based approach. This is the kind of person who is very big on the book, Christine. Right. So it would be like, oh, the manual says, right? That would be their go-to thing. There's a question of what am I supposed to do based on a set of rules? It's more law-based, right? And I think a lot of people function here, even though they claim they don't like this. But it can be helpful. Like, if you're in a situation that you've never been in, it's like, well, what does the rule book say? What does the manual say? Right. For others, especially engineers, it's the consequentialist, which is George, which is the result of the action is how you're assessing, right? So it'll be like, well, what's the consequence? And let me grade that, or causality, right? Of like, my action did this. Virtue is the culpability that Luke's brought up. It can fit in multiple categories, depends on how it was meant. Because for some, it would be the virtue issue, which is what you were talking about in the beginning of what's moral, right? What's good, quote unquote. And so the question would arise, I'm not going to force it you all right now, but to ask in your head is, do you think goodness is an act, an outcome, or an attribute? And those are those three different schools. I'm not getting into Cantonism. I'm actually happy that somebody online brought it up, but I was going to bring it in, but I won't for now. But if you view it as an act, it's the duty-based approach, right? And you'll see this in church, right? As the law says this, right? And then you've got the outcome of being like, if I didn't do this, this wouldn't happen, right? Therefore, this is why I'm doing it, right? And then the attribute is like, right, to be a respectable person, right, is like, now we're looking at the person. So I'm going to also get into, because this is going to be how we're going to get into the narrative in next week, but not today, is I want to bring up certain kinds of statements because they're very relevant. And they're indicators of how you think. And they're also part of why we're having an issue with these things. But first kind of statement is a normative statement. And I'm bringing this up because of how we talk when we're talking about good and completely ignoring the context. So a normative statement is exactly what it sounds like, of making a statement of something just being the norm. It is wrong to kill. That's a normative statement, right? And so it's like you guys are making some of those like in the debate. So just being like, it's just wrong, right? And it's like you're making a normative statement of apparently it's just that way. And so it's statements like that. It's wrong to steal. And a culture can embody certain kinds of norms, right? So for example, in Canada, I don't know about here, I think in Chicago too, definitely not in certain parts of Cali, but it is wrong to throw out your bottles in the garbage instead of the recycling bin, right? Like the whole social norm would be like, what are you doing if you were to do that, right? It would be like, you just don't do that. Other places, that doesn't exist. There are also evaluative statements. And I promise I'm not just trying to be a philosophy professor, but it, like we'll link these together. If I was trying when I'm failing at it. But the idea, evaluative statement is the idea that something has an actual value or worth. It's a statement about a thing or an action. Or in the case of virtue, in this culture, it tends to be thought of being about the person, right? The relative rightness of an action. So we talk about right when we're referring to actions and goodness when we're talking about people, right? Of being like, that's a good person, that's a bad person. It's insane in the comment that I'm making, I'm somehow assessing the value, not just the rightness, but the degree of goodness of something. Then there's facts, right? And facts are supposed to be statements that are either true or not true, right? Verifiable, perceivable. There's some standard of evidence, which was a lot of what you guys were referring to in talk number one, right? Of being like, that's like the most important to some people. There's preference. I won't spend a lot on that, but like you might just have a bias. But I'm bringing this up because I'm going to bring up one more kind in a second. One of the major problems that we have in these conversations about goodness, and this is why the narrative is going to matter, is we don't realize that there's these different kinds of statements. And so we're using them all as if they're the same, right? So that I can go up to somebody and just be like, that was bad, right? And then because of it, if I say that was bad in this culture, it's the equivalent of, most people take it as, you're calling me bad, right? And so then it becomes like, wow, because I disagreed with you, because I thought this idea was wrong, erroneous, incorrect, right? I'm evaluating. I made an evaluative statement. You took it as an evaluation of me, or you took the normative as though it was a preference, right? Where something is actually, or a fact, and treated it like it was a preference, right? That might be your truth. But it's like, for example, flat earth versus round earth. I don't care who's right or wrong in this conversation, but it's saying there's a fact about that, right? So if I change that factual statement into a preferential statement, we're in the realm of nonsense. But there's a whole other issue that arises from this and this phenomenon, and this is what is called emotivism. And this is what I wanted to bring up today before we get into the narrative. Emotivism is when people, an emotivist is someone who's in this line of thought and probably doesn't even know that they are, treat all evaluative statements as just preferences, right? This is the disease, I think, of our time. So there are things that we might be treating as though they're factual or evaluative, but they are actually preference. This is the whole my truth thing. And so it's contradictory. If I say it's right to protect the environment, that's more of a normative statement. If I say it's right to recycle, that might actually be an evaluative statement. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that we're treating everything as a preference for the most part, and then randomly calling things fact and normative. But then the new way of arriving at facts is turning into consensus. If we all think the same thing, somehow it's right. Right. And it's funny because that was often the criticism of religious institutions, but now that's general culture, right? If we can all say it together, somehow it is now more true, whether it is or isn't. So there needs to be a question of what makes the thing right. And the problem with all of these, right, whether a consequentialist, a Kantianist, duty-based, whatever you are, or an Aristotelian, is that you're dealing with something subjective, okay? And so the real question that you should be asking yourself is, how do I decide what I do? And that's why I started the question of why do you do what you do? Is because if you have no idea, you're crazy. Like it's just a matter of fact, right? If you have absolutely no idea why you are, you're crazy. Forgive me, right? If you have no idea why you study or not study, apart from because some person said it's your duty, because someone made a normative statement, right? Because somebody made an evaluative statement, you don't have any meaning. You don't have any core because it was arbitrary, right? Your meaning or your reason came from consensus, which may not even factually be true, right? And then the end result of this, like, is that we've ended up starting to view our beliefs with our identity. And so now someone thinks that you're wrong. You think it's equivalent to calling somebody wrong as a person. And the only way to resolve this way of thinking, this emotivist way of thinking, is what we're seeing in political context. It's force. It's tyranny. That's the only way, because we're not going to agree, right? And so then it becomes whoever is loudest. So Aristotle has a way of talking about things that, like, we're not, is different from this whole thing. I wanted to throw it out there as like, oh, and here's an alternative, but we've already gotten to the conclusion 2 weeks ago that we're supposed to get to, where he was saying every action happens for the sake of, and then you are supposed to insert the sake of what? And he was like, make a pyramid out of your for the sake of, right? Of every individual decision you make, if you can answer why I made it, you're going to go up a level, up a level, up a level, up a level, and go on. And to him, the top of the ladder, the ultimate why, for him becomes happiness. Right, which is what some of you were alluding to of if it makes me there. If that's what you think, can you find objective meaning in that? Objective, and I'm potentially using the word objective. If I live based on only what makes me quote unquote happy, is there objective meaning to me in that world of thought? Talk number one. No. If something is completely arbitrary, then I cannot base any meaning on it, right? It's only if math is real, then I can use an equation. If it is not real, I can't use it. It's just randomness. Right? So if a thing is not actually inherently, really, actually true, or the word being used is absolutely in its proper sense, because we are using words today clearly, absolutely, definitely, of course, as though they are when often they're not, right? But if there isn't such thing as absolutely, then there is absolutely no meaning to you. It's that simple, right? So there needs to be something that's true if I'm going to make evaluative statements. If I'm going to make factual statements, either one of those relies on something being actually true, right? And only if there is something actually true can I assess any of the things we talked about, right? I won't be able to say, is this a good decision to get Lay's or Doritos if I don't know that there's absolutely something called health. If there isn't, maybe that's not a consideration, right? For those that were talking about life, like John and a couple of others, well, what gives life absolute value? Is that true? And that's where it comes. And so the thing that we're going to move towards is that for us, goodness is not an idea. Goodness is not an object. For us, goodness is a whom. Goodness is a living being. Goodness is God. Okay. And that's why I wanted to use that to piggyback into the narrative. Because if we can get at that, there's everything is random, that's why we're not going to apologetics in the absence of truth, Right? Then it begs the question of, is there a me that I'm supposed to be? Right? And so then the questions of like, can I do this? Can I do that? Become real questions that have real answers. Because I'm designed, right? If I'm not designed, there's no real answer to that. It's whatever you feel like, right? Whatever you prefer or value, whether you prefer the consequence as your main motivator, whether it's the more, it doesn't matter. It's just whatever you feel like, right? So where I want to move from that thing, it won't be as dense of the questions as saying, what is the narrative, right? What is it that we're saying? What is it that we're saying about the absolute? In our case, it's a who are we saying is the absolute? If there is a God, what is his relationship to us? And then from that is where we can talk about what is righteousness? What is wrongness? Why does that matter? Does it make a difference? And I don't want it to be Sunday school style. Like, it's not going to be about just like, this is kocha, this is not good. It's more about how to live and to live. The first topics will become more clear as we move on of how that liberates me to actually live very freely and to live very joyfully, actually, not living like I'm stuck in prison, which I think many Christians feel that they are. So if we can get into the meaning that we can there, righteousness is a state, not a concept. And glory be to God forever. Amen. Any questions, comments? Go for it.
Back to like the arbitrary aspect. So this something may become arbitrary if it's not finite or fixed, something that's always changing or changing at some point.
If something is unfixed, it always been unfixed. In other words, and we'll talk about this when we get into the narrative, but in the absence of a ruler, I can't define a straight line. Mm-hmm. Right? So the ruler is the only reason that I know a curve exists, right? So that presence allows me to assess all the other things. So there might be something that has value, but it only will have value when it's linked somehow to truth.
And that can only be based off of like something that does not change ever.
Yes. Yeah. That's why when you brought about death, I'm like, that's interesting because Blessed Augustine, I didn't like his confessions are really emotional sometimes and I wasn't into it, but where I really felt this guy's brilliant was that comment when he was eventually making the comment of anything that can change, anything that decay can't be pure goodness. Because it's unfixed, it decays, it rots, it corrupts. He eventually associated any kind of change with corruption, right? Because it'll be like it's unable to maintain itself. So if my existence or reality or merit or value or joy is in this thing that is unfixed, that can change, then I can't really actually be meaningful, fulfilled, happy, etc. That was actually how he came to, there's got to be an absolute, and whatever it is goodness.
I know St. John Damascus also states that how do we arrive to God is like, he talks about the notion there's like everything that changes or like they decay. So eventually that has to be created and eventually reach to something that is uncreated, which is God.
Exactly. Right. So whatever is self-existent is what we would end up needing to view as God on somehow. Right? Or being like, if it can take life in and of itself, right? And that's why even these conversations, light, goodness, truth, beauty, they start becoming synonymous, like as it goes. Any onliners want to make any comments? Okay. I'm sorry, very sorry again for those of you who hate this style, but today was the last time for that. I think I'm here for another 2 or 3 weeks, but once I go to out of town or whatever, the talks will still happen at the same time, but it'll just be online. For those who want to meet in person anyway, I think that would be cool and just hang out and chill. Like it doesn't need to, like that might make it cool. I'm also planning, like at least once every 4 weeks that one of these be a Q&A. and not lecture style. Once I'm done kind of the, I don't use the word curriculum, but I'll use the word curriculum of what I want to get through, the style is going to change. There'll be like 1 week social, 1 week spiritual, 1 week biblical or dogmatic or faith-wise, and then the fourth will be Q&A. So it won't always be like all of that in a row. So whatever you guys also feel you want to have conversations about, the webmaster is putting up a form so that people can give feedback, ask questions, give scenarios, etc. Feel free to drop stuff in there. It will be read and put in there. So it's not going to be like a university course for a year or two. Like, that's not the plan. But I just wanted that if we're going to start having conversations about the stuff that people want to talk about, it's got to be rooted in the narrative. Once that's there, we're smooth sailing. Thanks, homies. All right. See, if there's anyone, I guess we're just chilling for those who want to attend liturgy. Liturgy is at 9:45. If there's anyone who wants to do one-on-one or whatever, just let me know and I can go upstairs. All right. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, one God, amen. Lord, make us ready to pray thankfully. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not temptation, but from evil one. Christ, your Son, Lord, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory.